Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I am Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us for our first of 2 hours on this Friday. Coming up in the second hour on the world famous Happy Hour. She tore down during her debut on the world famous a couple of months ago. DJ Kool Sunny T is back spinning live house music all night long on the world famous Happy Hour. It's coming up in the second hour of the show. A little bit later in this first hour, the Mod Squad will be here. That's Taya Graham and Stephen Janis, coming directly from a press conference, I believe, that was held by the state's attorney of Baltimore City, Marilyn Mosby, or at least her office. They were giving some more instruction as far as the cases affected by this police officer who was caught inadvertently videotaping himself, allegedly planting drug evidence at the scene of a crime. We'll have the latest on that scenario with the Mod Squad coming up in a few moments. But before we get to that, Kamal High is the managing editor of the Baltimore or the Afro-American newspaper, the greatest newspaper, black newspaper in the world. Kamal is in the studio with me now. Kamal, welcome back to the show.
Good to see you, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition, or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name, S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S. Or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share it with the people unless you don't want me to. And, of course, I won't do that. Back to the pages of the Afro newspaper. Kamal, front page. This is one of the more provocative photos that you've selected in a while, sir.
Well, we selected as a team. But yes, we decided to go with a picture of an African-American woman who also happens to be a reverend holding a pistol. Or looks, I believe it's actually a 9mm.
It's a Glock.
Yes. Because it goes with a story about how more black women are picking up legal firearms in this age of Trump, and sort of why that might be.
Well, you took it right. I did not read that story, but as soon as I saw it, I said, well, that's a reaction to the 45th president of the United States, and I understand it. But what does it say specifically about it?
Well, you know, there's a difference between, you know, causation and correlation, but, you know, the numbers are still early, but it looks that that along with the rise in reported attacks of discrimination and racist incidents, more black women are purchasing firearms in an effort to protect themselves.
Hey, you know, I mean, sometimes things are so obvious and plain. I mean, it's the threats to black people generally, and now I guess an escalated threat to black women specifically. Black women are some of the smartest people in the world, so, you know, protection, get legal protection, legal firearms.
And the training that goes along with it.
Exactly true. We have a wrap-up of the 108th National NAACP Conference by Alexis Taylor.
Yes, the National NAACP was in town last week, or up until this week on Wednesday. They had their gala. The Afro was there covering all the ins and outs. You know, we've got sort of a wrap-up. And then we also got an interview with the star of the new Black Panther movie. And he's also the star of the upcoming movie Marshall, about Thurgood Marshall. So we have an interview with him just a host of other things that sort of let you know what was going on with the NAACP.
We had it covered.
Yes. you had a hand in that.
Yeah, I had a hand in that, but we as a team had it covered, I think, from beginning to end. We actually had Alexis providing some reporting on First Edition as well. So, mm-hmm. pat ourselves on the back. I mean, we did. I mean, it was we touched a lot of different areas. So it was good. It was good that we had the opportunity to do all that. All hands on deck.
Yes. You know, now that the convention's over, what do you think the direction the NAACP will take is going to be?
No idea. I mean, I just think that this is such a critical. I mean, every time is a critical time. But given the impact of the 45th president, given the atmosphere of the country right now, and quite frankly, the incompetence that's been exhibited by the president and his staff, we just got the word that Reince Priebus is. I mean, there's a different scenario. Almost, it seems like there's a different scenario of breaking news every day with this White House. Reince Priebus, the chief of staff for the 45th president, out.
After only 6 months. I mean, it's a record amount of time for a chief of staff to be displaced.
Well, I mean, if you're going to break a record for that type of dubious record, this would be the president that you would do it with. John Kelly is the man who is replacing Reince Priebus, who was former chair of the Republican National Committee.
Yes, an old school power player.
Yeah. And it just, the implosion, some people would say the implosion continues with this 45th president. We will continue to report on it as we go forward. Back to the pages of the Afro newspaper. Rashawn Baker has to answer some questions, it seems, as he goes forward with his campaign to be the next governor of the state.
Yes, the Prince George's County executive, while he is running for governor, he's one of three African-Americans in the race so far. You know, we keep hearing rumors about Donna Edwards jumping into the race, right, but nothing has been confirmed so far. There were several school incidents in Prince George's County while Baker, who as county executive would be in charge of the school system there, including several school aides being caught for child pornography charges, one involving the actual students at the school. And another sort of unfolding affair appears to be that several of the high schools in Prince George's County, they have been accused of essentially pushing students along to graduate, even if they weren't ready. Baker, of course, has denied this, and there's an investigation going on currently. So we will see what happens with that.
That's serious. Those serious allegations under Rashawn Baker's watch as a PG executive. So we will continue to pay attention to that.
Yes. Well, it's Prince George's County. Apparently they get very upset when you refer to it as PG. That's what people tell me.
I've heard that, too. Sorry about that, PG. I'm sorry. All right, that was snarky. Prince George's County, because there are several people who are from Prince George's County who circulate through WEAA all the time, so no disrespect.
If you're from Prince George's County, call in and tell us why you find the nickname PG offensive. I've heard an explanation for it, but I find it difficult to believe. I've heard someone explain to me once that the PG, it almost sounds like you're saying Pig Town.
What?
And I thought that seems
that's absurd.
That seems unusual. But if you know why people in Prince George's County don't like the nickname PG, tell us.
Wow. Okay. I'm interested in hearing that actually myself. That'll only inflame me, make me say it more often. But anyway, the archive section of the front page, Clarence Mitchell going back to 1969.
Yes, we timed it because the NAACP convention was winding down. Normally, at the end of the NAACP convention, they give out the prestigious Spingarn Medal, which is named for a long-term activist who's long since dead. So we went back to 1969 in our archives when they gave it to Baltimore's own Clarence Mitchell for many of his acts, but particularly for his help in passing the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
The one known as the 101st Senator.
Yes.
One of the great civil rights icons of the 20th century. Moving from the front page of the Afro newspaper let's go to Baltimore. Why not? Let's go to the Baltimore area, Baltimore section of the newspaper. This bill, this mandatory minimum gun bill, is all but non-existent, really, because the amendments that have been added to it at the beginning of this week basically neutralize it, and it neutralize it in the context of what state law actually already covers. So this gun bill that caused so much controversy and so much anger on the part of so many people is basically dead, at least at this point.
Yes, I mean it's a striking picture of a protester being arrested. The protest broke out, I believe, what, Monday night when the council was meeting. Feelings were clearly inflamed over this issue. So it seems that in this case, the protesters have won.
Indeed. We had Christopher Burnett was called into the show during our segment on the Baltimore ceasefire yesterday and explained his reason for not backing the mandatory minimum law. And ultimately, the response from several members of the city council was simple. Mandatory minimums don't work. And indeed, many people believe they are inherently racist. So there's that.
Full disclosure, we should also note that Christopher Burnett wrote an opinion piece for this week's Baltimore section about a better way to fight crime in Baltimore.
Absolutely. Giving his ideas about what we can do to try to deter violence in our city. Since he came out against the bill, he wanted to give, other options. And he did so in the pages of the Afro newspaper this week.
Speaking of deterring violence, your column this week is about the basketball tournament.
Yes, the basketball tournament.
Kind of a generic name, I have to say.
Well, I guess they're trying to suggest that this is the basketball tournament.
I just read it as the basketball tournament.
Well, it is the basketball tournament. Or the basketball tournament. $2 million single elimination tournament featuring 64 teams. The semifinals and finals are going to be played here in Baltimore, in West Baltimore, at Coppin State University. This was a tournament that was in New York City last year. Very high profile, going to be televised on ESPN. Carmelo Anthony is the host and face of the tournament. But connected to the tournament, community service for people in the neighborhoods connected to Coppin State, job opportunities. There's going to be a refurbishing of several neighborhoods in the Sandtown Winchester area, and this is all being bought back to Baltimore or being bought to Baltimore by two brothers, LaRon Finney and Derek D. Chase. So job well done by those brothers making that happen, and we need to support that. I think it's going to be a great tournament, but it's also a lot of great services being provided by people who need those services.
Yes, it's always nice to see some positive news happening in Baltimore, and native son Carmelo Anthony coming back, always nice. We should ask him if what's the latest on his trade rumors of him going from the Knicks to somewhere else.
Well, who knows? Who knows? They've been talking about trading Carmelo for a long time.
Yes. But, yes, since Phil Jackson re-signed that no trade clause.
Yeah. Anyway.
Good job, Phil.
Good job, Phil. Mentoring Baltimore youth for two decades. That is a story by Bobby Marvin Holmes about Cameron Miles, a brother who has been doing incredible work mentoring young black boys for more than two decades now.
Yes, I mean this is truly an amazing story, and I think truly an Afro kind of story. It highlights an individual working to bring positive change and a commitment to bringing positive change to their neighborhood and their people. I mean, it's really admirable stuff.
Cameron, who I know pretty well, when he first started when he first implemented this mentoring program, I know a lot of that money came out of his pocket initially to kind of travel with these young boys. And he always could use more help. But I mean, just much respect to that brother for the work that he's done all these years.
Does the city help him out at all?
A little bit, yes.
Oh, that's good.
I know that he is now headquartered at New Shiloh, mm-hmm. and I don't know the exact connection, but I think the city does help him some. If I'm wrong, Cameron will correct me, but the bottom line is whatever help he can get from whatever source, legitimate source he can receive it from, it is well deserved because the work he does is incredible and very vital. Let's go to I wanted to look at this arts and culture section of the Afro. This story about the film Detroit. As a matter of fact, my friend Charles Robinson, veteran journalist Charles Robinson, I reached out to him the other night, and I was asking him if he was at the final ceremony, and he was actually seeing the film Detroit and said it was an incredible film. So we have a story about the film Detroit in the paper.
Yes, one of our writers, Nadine Matthews, sat down with some of the actors in the film to talk about the making of it. When it looks like, the movie hasn't come out yet, so no one really knows, but it looks like it might be getting some buzz, shall we say, of the award kind.
I think that's a great thing. It is a film focused on the 1967 riots in Detroit.
And several murders that took place.
Absolutely.
At the hands of the police. And then one mystery death that no one's really ever sort of solved. One African-American death that no one's really solved.
One of the worst scenarios of rioting in United States history in Detroit in 1967. Also in the arts and culture page, the sports section, an analysis by Uncle Perry Green of the NWA Sports Report, also Afro Sports editor. Leave Michael Vick alone. His hair advice to Kaepernick wasn't wrong. Stirred a lot of controversy.
Yes, people felt some type of way. we get a lot of comments on our articles, but this one in particular, people were very upset. And interestingly, to me at least, because I read most of the comments, is that a lot of people were saying, "Hey, leave Michael Vick alone," and it was like, "Well, that's what the article says."
Yeah.
If you want to come out in favor of a convicted dog killer, I'm all, you know, do your thing.
I'm reading part of Perry's analysis here, and I can see why he inflamed some people. Black activists and hoteps alike have been lambasting Vick for his comments ever since, but it's time for everyone to back off because what he said wasn't wrong. Black activists and hoteps.
Yes. Nice. Hotep is a word I only recently learned. Are you familiar with it?
I am familiar.
Yes. That's a funny word.
Yeah, I am familiar. if you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yo. Your host. I'm in the studio of Kamau High. He is the managing editor of the Afro-American newspaper, number one black newspaper in the world. We are going through the newspaper, reviewing some of the top news stories of the week directly from the pages of the Afro. Let's go to...
I have a stick with the Colin Kaepernick story for a hot minute.
Okay.
Do you think Colin Kaepernick will play in the NFL again?
That's a great question. I think he should. I think that he has the ability to help many teams. He actually could start for several teams in the National Football League right now. But the league, one of the narratives that we explored a couple of weeks ago on the NWA Sports Report is the reality is that the NFL is owned by white men, mm-hmm. most of them very conservative, most mm-hmm. of them Republicans. And Colin Kaepernick's political stance is something that is distasteful to many of them, and therefore they don't want to give him a chance to play for their football teams. And that's what it really boils down to. But the bottom line is, if a team is desperate enough for help, they'll call Colin Kaepernick and he'll do a good job. So,
yeah, I mean, it's always fascinating when you hear people say like, oh, you know, so-and-so would be a distraction, and you hear it, but then you hear it from teams that are hiring people who abuse their spouse, murder people, have drug convictions, say all sorts of crazy things.
Absolutely. And the you know, the hypocrisy is incredible in those scenarios. But I think it is demonstrative of the atmosphere we are in our country, the polarized, highly polarized political atmosphere that we're in. And so if you take a knee during the pledge, you become a pariah, I guess.
Who do you think will be on the field first, Johnny Manziel or Colin Kaepernick? Because Manziel's trying to come back as well.
Colin Kaepernick. Johnny is poison.
Johnny football?
Johnny football is poison. Hell of a football player, but just, I don't know. DC, let's go to DC section. Unfortunate story. Veteran news anchor, DC news anchor. I mean, he was on the air for a long time. Had an incredible run. Jim Vance died recently.
Yes, I mean, you know, I did not grow up in Baltimore, but I was aware of who Jim Vance was, and from all accounts, he was a local legend who not only was a fine reporter and news anchor, but also mentored and helped many journalists come up through the ranks.
Yeah, I mean, he's, as a matter of fact, in one of these photos that we have in the DC section, he's holding up a check with the Vance Scholarship on it. So, I mean, he not only was an excellent journalist, but I mean, gave back to his community and did so in a philanthropic way.
Yes, he was recently added to the what I consider the DC Hall of Fame, the mural on Ben's Chili Bowl.
Oh, yeah. That is high profile indeed. Let's see, what else do we have in D.C.? This interesting conference celebrating Black Latinas in D.C.
Yes, I mean, so there was a recent conference in in Washington, D.C. for black Latinas. And the whole premise of it is that many black Latinas, you know, they face what they consider difficult because, you know, while they are both African-American and Latin American, you know, the people often try to force them to choose one or the other as a way of identification. And this conference was sort of held for them to sort of explore the intersectionality of the two races and sort of find a way forward.
Sophisticated settings. I just saw this. Mr. Thurgood Marshall's an exhibit. It was an exhibit, I suspect, of honoring the life of the great Supreme Court Justice, Baltimore native Thurgood Marshall.
Yes, it was held. It was held in early July at the St. Augustine Episcopal Church in Washington, D.C. Yes, it seems like there was an event to honor his legacy. He was obviously a powerful man and an influential figure.
Well, I see in the pictures his widow, mm-hmm. Cecilia Marshall, was there on hand. So absolutely legit. I got the opportunity, the privilege of meeting her several years ago. Professor Larry Gibson wrote the book, Young Thurgood, a few years back, and I got the opportunity to meet Mrs. Marshall. So it was a great honor to meet her, the widow of the Supreme Court Justice, who, before he even moved to New York and became the head of the NAACP, was a groundbreaking civil rights activist in Baltimore City, along with Charles Hamlin in Houston. So the legacy of Marshall stretches back to Baltimore, and the roots are deep in Baltimore City. So that is this week's episode of the Afro Newspaper. Excellent job, as always, Kamal.
Thank you, Sean. Oh, and also, don't forget, we have our 125th
yes.
gala coming up on August.
God, please don't forget.
August 12th at Martin's Crosswind in Prince George's County.
Prince George's County, that
yes.
is.
You can call 410-554-8200 for more information.
I think as far as Prince George's County, I think we may have a comment about that. Uh-oh. I don't know. Let's see.
Let's see.
Ray in Columbia, you're on First Edition.
Hello, Ray.
Are you there?
Okay, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. Hey, first of all, well, Sean, I'm going to give you your props, man. I pulled an Afro a few weeks ago down to D.C., and I saw your article on the Confederate statue still remain in Baltimore. I thought it was an excellent article.
Thank you, brother. Well, hello? Yep. You still there?
Calling Prince George's County, PG.
Mm-hmm.
We get a little offended because nobody calls any of these other counties by their nickname. There's no QA County, that's Queen Anne. There's no M County, that's Montgomery County, it's only PG. That's like calling Baltimore Bodymore or Murdermore or B-more.
Hmm. People call Baltimore B-more.
People call Baltimore
Charm
like
City.
I don't like it, but they do.
Really?
But nah, I don't like
it. A lot of people outside, they just say B-more or Baltimore, and they call it Murdermore and Bodymore. Mm. That's been in the paper a long time because, you know, you got all these murders up here.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. We've noticed that.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, Ray, thank you. We appreciate you calling in, man. Appreciate it.
That's interesting. You know, I spent many years in New York and sort of NYC.
All right. I'm going to let it go. It's just
fascinating.
All right. Kamal High is the managing editor of the Afro Newspaper. Kamal, thank you. Good job. We'll see you next week.
See you next week, Sean.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the Mod Squad, Terry Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network will be here. We're going to get an update from that press conference at the state's attorney's office. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host, making the transition from the pages of the Afro newspaper to the work of the Mod Squad. They are in the studio. It is Taya Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network. Friends, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Sean. Glad to be here. Thank you for having us.
We're happy to have you. So you are just coming back from the state's attorney's office?
Well, we weren't there. We watched it on Periscope.
Good.
We had to Periscope.
We're actually off today. So, from our trip from Ohio, we worked through the weekends. We took a day off. So we watched it on Periscope. We did not get a chance to go down.
But ultimately, the state's attorney wanted to give us, I guess, an update on the cases affected by the police officer who was apparently inadvertently caught videotaping himself planting drugs, allegedly.
I should not laugh because that kind of activity has actually cost people their lives and livelihood in Baltimore. I shouldn't laugh. But
this narrative is sort of becoming like the Mad Lib of Baltimore policing. Insert officer found planting evidence or
planting
doing something.
What?
Or lying or whatever. Yeah. And so now the state's attorney isn't. So, 2 weeks ago or a week ago, a video surfaced at the public defender had subpoenaed during a case in which an officer was seen allegedly planting drugs in a back lot over in, I think, southeast or southwest Baltimore. And, the video, of course, went crazy. And,
it became a national story.
And so the state's attorney has gone through, has had to go again, just like they did in the case of the seven officers who were, indicted for a money laundering, racketeering, and stealing from residents, has had to go through a number of cases.
As a matter of fact, they've had to evaluate over 500 body cam worn videos.
Yeah. But there are 124 cases related to these officers, I believe, right, Taya?
Well, actually, I think it was for the Baltimore 7, the officers that
were... No, but I'm talking about today about the officers that we just reviewed.
Sure. She mentioned 123 cases in which the officers are involved.
And so they've thrown out 34 cases that they have decided are not... that are reliant primarily upon the testimony of these officers. They found 12 viable cases... and there are 77 cases that are still under review.
Sure. And just so that, your listeners know, what they used as their criteria is wherever an officer was considered a material and necessary witness, where they were the exclusive witness, that is when they chose to dismiss it. They searched for cases in which there were other officers that were considered credible, and they reevaluated those cases. But if it was just to rely on those officers, it was dismissed.
Yeah. So, once again, there is a big mess. Now, if you want to put this into context, think about it. You have 124 cases. I mean, that can involve hundreds of people who might have been arrested illegally. And they asked what kind of cases. These are all felony drug and felony gun possession cases.
Right. All of the cases are felony drug.
Felony drug, felony gun. So extremely serious cases. So put these guys together with the Gun Trace Task Force, and you've got a wake of mayhem on a community that is unfathomable, really. I mean, 34 cases of themselves, they've destroyed 34 lives. Let's keep adding up this tally and see where we end up.
And that mayhem is twofold. Not only is it that they're destroying people's lives by locking up people who should not be in jail, but bad arrest means that people who are actually violent offenders, people who actually want to do harm in our community, are not being arrested. Or if they are, because they're being arrested by these officers that are not credible, they're being let go. So it's twofold.
But here's the question that I have. Also, you mentioned the fact that the state's attorney's office is reviewing 500.
That's
500 pieces of body cam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, out of 500, really think it's going to be pristine?
Oh. Well, she had already said during the press conference there was one case they had referred to internal affairs. Mm-hmm. There were questions about whether or not the officers could be prosecuted for perjury because they testified in court that they found the drugs, and they'd also, put that in their statement of probable cause, which, of course, those are both things you do under oath. And Marilyn Mosby said that this case was being handled by internal affairs, which we know, it's very interesting because in the Freddie Gray case, she handled that case herself. But there's still a potential for criminal charges, which would, I think, make any case they were tied to completely, prosecutable.
But you know, I think there was some criticism, I think, from some of your callers that they felt that she was moving, that Marilyn Mosby's office was moving too slowly on this case.
I
had heard some criticism, and I think she said it really took about 3 business days for her to gather all this evidence.
Yeah. No, that was in the press conference. There was criticism when they asked her about that. Yeah, not the people here, but. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's actually, I do think there was one specific caller, but I won't call him out. But the process that Deputy State's Attorney Bledsoe mentioned is a really intense process when you have a question about body-worn camera footage. It has to go to, you have to contact your supervisor, who contacts the chief of body-worn camera, then the front office has to look at it, and they make a determination, and it goes to this computer unit called MIS, and then they disseminate the name of the, mm-hmm. you know, the officer throughout the State's Attorney's office. So it really is quite a process.
It's an amazing undertaking, I think, to go through all these cases and to think the people sitting in jail right now. I mean, 34 people were facing either felony drug charges or felony gun charges, who now, I guess, have had the charges dropped. But who knows? They probably paid bail and they've been in jail.
I'm so glad you mentioned that they might have paid bail, because think about what kind of reparations are they owed for losing part of their. They may have lost a job. Mm-hmm. They may have lost the opportunity to make money to pay child support or take care of loved ones or anything like that. There's so many different ways that they've been impacted. What kind of reparations are they going to receive?
Yeah.
Well, we've discussed that prospect many times on these airwaves, and I still think that I don't think I know that it is a path that is worth exploring in our city, and we should not ever let go that prospect of exploring the possibility of repairing the people who were harmed some catastrophically in the aftermath of zero tolerance policing in Baltimore, which was implemented officially in 1999, and the residue of it continues to harm hundreds, thousands of people to this day.
Well, one thing that's interesting about this whole and contextual here is that we broke on this show two months ago that the commissioner was coming up with these neighborhood action teams, whatever they're called. The Sun just did the story. But it's worth bringing up because these action teams, which the commissioner claims are going to be in uniform, but of course the documents that we obtained that we discussed on the show said they'd be in something like a class 3 uniform, which is like cargo pants, whatever. But we'll be doing again the same thing that the guys on the camera and the guys in the gun task force are doing, which is not doing patrol, not being assigned to specific areas or specific expertise like burglary, but rather, you know, sort of whole freelancing and, you know, looking for people with guns and people with drugs and doing exactly. And it's just, to me, hard to understand why the commissioner didn't put these people in patrol or at least try something different, because these guys are going to have the same sort of operational latitude. Now, the commissioner did say, and we had reported this 2 months ago, that they would be under the auspice of the district commanders. But, I mean, I think that might just be, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I'm skeptical of that.
Patrol, you know, from my understanding, as just from being a kid and watching, having neighborhood police officers, when you have an officer patrolling your neighborhood, that officer, if he walks a regular beat, the essence of it is a regular beat, meaning he becomes part of the community.
It's called omnipresence.
Right.
You know? It's
staple
of law enforcement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, what the commissioner said was that the officers have too many calls to focus on violent criminals, so they're just going from call to call, and there's been a big debate about that, and a lot of people I talked to tell me that's not actually true. But, you know, really, you can't, having a unit just driving around ad hoc saying do this is not probably going to have the same impact as having a regular patrol, as you point out, in a neighborhood where people know there's a police presence that is constructive.
What would be great, and it seems in this context in Baltimore City in 2017 seems almost impossible, but it would be great if those officers began to build a rapport with members of communities.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't even seem realistic given the atmosphere we're operating in.
The interesting thing, I think, you know, as a person, because I'm poor, I can't really afford to like join a gym or something, but I walk a lot. And like by just walking through a neighborhood every day, you get to know almost all the people, you know, the houses that are for sale, you know, people's stories. I mean, there's a lot of information.
And you recognize who doesn't belong in the neighborhood.
And you recognize who doesn't belong. You just gather a lot of information that would be very difficult to discern if you just drove through it really quickly. Now, I know not every neighborhood is geographically suitable to walking, but that type
Most of them are, though.
Yes, they are. And I don't see how you police without understanding that community and having that relationship. It's not an easy job, but I don't see how you do it because I know what houses are for sale. I know what house burned down. I know so many people. And I'm not even a cop, and I walk like 15 minutes, you know, half an hour a day. Mm-hmm. If you were there all day, you would know everything. If someone got killed, you'd probably know who did it before anybody else. It would be a real great experiment because it's human intelligence, and it doesn't come from stats, and it certainly doesn't come from driving through it.
You know, that makes me think of what Chief Kelvin Sewell, who was a homicide detective in Baltimore for years, was a chief of police in Pocomoke City and now works in the state's attorney's office in our city. It reminds me of what he said about policing in Pocomoke, where he was in charge of the safety of around 4,300 people. And he would walk on the street, meet his officers, get out of the car and walk on the street and talk to people. And once he established a rapport with the community, he said, I would know when the crime was going to happen before it happened because someone would call me and let me know. He said mm-hmm. he didn't even have to. He said it was the best preventive medicine you could hope for. People knew when people right. even that when the mischief makers, as he called them, were actually going to be up to no good. He could actually prevent the crimes from happening, let alone being able to find out who really did break into that house or who did really break into that
car. And conversely, a group of people untethered from any sort of community, roving through the neighborhood in cargo pants and Kevlar vests
and neck tattoos
is not going to gender any sort of relationship. It's just not going to happen. You see those guys just like
they're invaders.
Yeah, you look at them, you're
they're
like
they're an occupying force. And, I think is how it feels.
You know the way they go about it, like go out and get a gun. Go get a gun. I mean, you know, what does that tell you as a police officer? You know, mm-hmm. it doesn't tell you to like consider a community or learn about the community. It just tells you to go find an object. Which, as we learn with the Gun Trace Task Force, became quite easy and a facile way to put people in jail.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Edition here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yeo, your host. I'm in the studio with the Mod Squad. That is Taya Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network. We're talking about law enforcement and politics. Let's take a quick phone call. Let's go to Stephen in Baltimore, who has a comment about police. Stephen, you're on with the Mod Squad. How are you doing?
Good, good. Something really sad me that you guys, as a journalist, you're supposed to report the right information.
Okay, what did we get wrong?
I'm coming, sir.
All right,
if,
sir.
If I may.
Yes, sir.
Instead to put the oil and the fuel, okay? We already know that the tension between the community and the police department
right.
is high.
Yeah.
And you guys keeping, you know, fuel it. I don't know what is the reason.
How are we feeling?
The
what are we feeling?
The 200 murders, sir. Is not the police doing that?
Did we say anything about 200 murders today?
Estate to report the right information.
Tell me what we got wrong.
Okay, I'm coming. You don't give me a chance, and then you will cut me off.
Well, come on.
I'm coming.
Come on.
Okay?
Come on.
So first of all, you're talking about you're blaming the police for all the crime in the city.
You're misrepresenting us. That doesn't make any sense.
I mean, I'm pretty sure what we were discussing was the state's attorney's office and what she needs to have our office do to review the body-worn camera footage. And unfortunately, there has been body-worn camera footage of police officers acting poorly. But that does not mean that we are blaming all of the ills of Baltimore City on the police department or all the crime. It's just we're just discussing simply the press conference of Marilyn Mosby today.
We're talking about police effectiveness, and police effectiveness has to do with, you know, putting police resources, which we're talking about, having more effective allocations of resources, which, you know, I think is all of us want to see. No one wants to see violence continue, but certainly the policies in place aren't working.
And this Stephen is a blind, has blind allegiance to the Baltimore Police Department, and I wish we had a dollar for every time we've said the vast majority right. of the men and women of the right. Baltimore Police Department
right.
do their job and do it admirably every right. single day.
Of course.
But Stephen, I guess he hears what he wants to hear. So.
And I did cite a police officer that I have the utmost respect for and was mentioning his method of policing as one that could be adopted in our community. I certainly have respect for good police officers, and I was just talking about one.
Let's go to Brother Leo Burrows in Polton Hill. Brother Burrows, you're on with the Mod Squad.
Evening, Mod Squad. How are you?
Good evening, Brother Burrows.
Well, very quickly, police
should be given permission by supervisors or someone in a standardized fashion to turn off cameras, the body cameras. Right now, they can turn them on and off at will.
Yes.
They have control over that. That's wrong. There has to be a standardized procedure here for validation of correctness and procedural kinds of issues.
I agree with you 100%.
Foot patrols are alive and well, I'm told, in Federal Hill, but they're not alive and well at open-air drug markets in the black communities and other black communities that are in need of patrol. So that's a repetition of something we've said before. Drug and gun accountability was raised at the recent hearing on the first of the one-year mandatory sentencing, and once again the question was raised, how do you account for drugs and guns that are confiscated, and how are they certified? Certifying when, where, and how these guns and drugs are destroyed. That has yet to be answered. And last but far from least, the dirt bike situation. They successfully arrested, the dirt bike task force successfully arrested 50 black men, confiscated 200 dirt bikes, and yet we see the specter of dirt bikes and the entrepreneurial aspects of that never being explored. Universe Old Circus, three white men on dirt bikes, fantastic. They made a lot of money. Anne Arundel County is getting ready to set forth a spectacular on dirt bikes. We do not know how to engage our young people in ways that are positive, that will produce economic results.
Agreed.
Thank you.
Brother Burroughs, thank you for your comment. Let's go to Clarence in the city. Clarence, you're on with the Mod Squad. How you doing?
In response to something that was said, that's a command.
Whoa.
Wow. Do you have a lot of calls? Because the police department just put out a statement about the state's attorney's press conference.
No, we don't have a lot of calls.
I just want to read this because it's extremely interesting.
Go ahead.
By the way, I just want to make a comment. Someone calls who never listens to the show and starts blasting us. Where do you think that came from? I'll just give you, exactly. The criminal case mentioned today by the state's attorney involves two arrests and the recovery of drugs from a car during a traffic stop. There is a gap in the body worn camera video that occurs after the recorded recovery of the drugs and before the final recovery of additional drugs. We are investigating the incident. So they're calling it a gap. I think that's a little bit. That's a little bit of a.
That's a bit of
shot
euphemism.
Across the bow. That's a at bit the of, state's attorney's office. You know,
it's a gap. It was a purposeful.
Yeah, you know, what did he call it? Reenactment.
I don't even want to use that word reenactment because they latched onto that. I was absolutely shocked when ABC 2 News said that to Commissioner Davis. Was the police officer reenacting the crime? You can't reenact it.
Yeah,
that's not how the chain of evidence works. You cannot do that.
It's not even, and you know, you can't lie about it too. But this is really interesting that they quickly release this, kind of saying, you know, hey, I mean, to me, it sounds like they're trying to parse what has been widely reported.
But you know what, I think Brother Burroughs brings up a really good point, is that there needs to be a policy, and they need to be transparent about what this policy is on when you are allowed to, mm-hmm. if at all, to turn off your body camera. Now, I know every city agency is different, and perhaps what works in one city may not work in another, but I am sure that there is a paper that's written on what the best practices are, what has been most effective, and we need to have a standardized agreement on when you're supposed to turn that camera off, if ever.
And one thing I will note, we did watch the press conference on Periscope, and Commissioner Davis was not there.
Yes, he was absent.
No, there was not a single representative of the police department at the state's attorney's press conference.
Let me go back to the phones. We got Clarence back. Clarence, you're on with the Mod Squad. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for taking the call back, Sean.
Sure.
I just wanted to reiterate on that part. The police officers, they take orders from the command structure.
Right.
If the command structure doesn't order them or make that the policy that they should release in the fashion that you described, it's not going to get done. The body cameras should never be turned off.
Agreed.
I watched something that's on the Sun Papers website of a police officer that walked in of a liquor store robbery of two armed suspects, and he let both of them live. He was 5 feet away from one he had on the ground who had the gun within arm's reach. He held him at bay while another one in the back of the store, and this police officer begged this kid not to move. Homeboy, I will shoot you. Please don't move. Okay? That's an example of good police officer. Mm. And I believe it was on Harford Road somewhere. He begged these kids not to make him shoot them. Right. Now, that's the contrast. You wouldn't have saw that if that body camera had been.
That's a good point.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Thank you, Clarence.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, Commissioner Davis has embraced them, and most police chiefs do, because they do tend to, their studies have shown they do tend to reduce, and there's been conflicting studies, but some of the initial studies show they do tend to reduce complaints. And, you know, the police department has trotted them out and used them in different in shootings to justify shootings. So, relatively speaking, I think it's been a positive development. And if these officers are not following the rules, you know, there's nothing more destructive than false arrests. So,
yeah. Indeed. Let's talk a little bit about this gun law. This gutted gun law now. It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't seem like it has anywhere it can go after these amendments have been placed on it. It came out of the committee. It will go the amended bill will go to the full council, and basically it's been neutralized by state law already.
There's already a state law in the books that does the same thing.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of absurd.
You know, you have to be within a school or a church when you get caught, or a public building. I mean, it was more, as we all know, like a symbolic gesture, and came on the heels of a conflict that broke out between Councilman Brandon Scott and the mayor over a crime plan. And I think this was like, look, this is a crime plan. Although the mayor did, at the last press conference of the Board of Estimates on Wednesday, go through a litany of arguments about how there is a crime plan. But I think that's what this was. It was purely symbolic. And the council, I think, made, turned it into exactly what it is, even, you know, nothing, really. I mean, with a second offense, the second time you get caught within 100 feet of a school with a gun, you know. But I think it was definitely a watershed event.
Did they keep the $1,000 fine?
It was a watershed event. Anyone who watched that council meeting, I mean, I've never seen people so angry.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, I've never seen it. And I've also never seen the council members push back so hard against a police solution to a violence problem. I mean, you know, you had Councilman Brandon Scott, you had Councilman Christopher Burnett. Yeah, you had
Christopher.
Yeah, no, it's cool. So you had a real, real pushback, and I think that shows we're in a different era of the city council.
I think so. You saw Commissioner Davis lobby hard during that hearing for this bill, The council and people were not having it.
And Kurt Anderson, you know, came in made a very impassioned speech about, Mackenzie Elliott being shot and a 97-year-old, I guess it was 97, 96-year-old man being murdered. But the thing that was very impassioned about it. But the thing is that, you know, as Burnett said, these things don't work. And I think it's finally starting to be sort of reach a political consensus that as much as it would be great if all we had to do was sort of turn up the volume on policing, that it doesn't work, and or at least not work in the form and fashion in which we're applying it.
Right.
So I think at least, that sort of sanity in the council, or at least saying, looking at the evidence, let's say in the data, and showing that it doesn't work. There was one great example how Councilman Scott brought up the fact that the city, the greatest, sharpest reduce in crime was in 2003 in New York, and they passed a similar gun law in 2007 or mm-hmm. nine, like eight, or maybe yeah. it was nine, mm-hmm. 6 years later. So, you know, this, I think what they were really dealing with is not the concept of the law, but the concept that these kinds of moves have any sort of substantive impact on the violence that underlies them. Right.
Let me go to Buddy in Sandtown, who has a comment. Buddy, you're on with the Mod Squad. Hello? Line 3?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, it's Bubby.
Bubby, okay.
B-U-B-B-Y. Let me just say, we confused in Sandtown why Kevin Davis is not terminated, first of all. 200-plus murders. The majority of them come from West Baltimore. The majority of them was retaliation, but we're not going to get on that point. Let's go on a point where historically we remember zero tolerance, how Mr. O'Malley came into Sandtown, West Baltimore, and extracted mostly African-American males out this neighborhood. The men and women in this community hate the police. So building a relationship is almost impossible when you have the father telling the children, the mother telling the children about the historical planting up evidence on the people in West Baltimore. And still today, no one has apologized to destroying the families in West Baltimore by police and politicians' policies. That's what we must deal with. I was there at City Hall, and what I seen was Carcello incite the people, Jack Young disrespectful, but I found a new hero in the city councilman, Christopher Burnett, and that guy Cohen.
Bubby, your phone is breaking up really bad, but we get the point. But yeah, the bottom line is that I don't want an apology for the people of West Baltimore. I want money. I want repair. I want money. I want jobs. You know, an apology doesn't do anything for anybody, and that's not going to come. Mm-hmm. We need jobs. We need money. We need services in West Baltimore. We need people's situations to be addressed directly. Mm-hmm. What has happened to them in the wake of zero tolerance policing as it continues to resonate through our communities?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let me take one more quick call. Let's go to Nicole in Towson. Nicole, you're on with the Mod Squad.
Hi, Mod Squad. How's everybody?
We're good.
Good evening. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to say that I agree that not enough is being said or done about the people who have been arrested, who have been wrongly arrested, and whose lives have been changed exponentially due to the bad policing that's been going on. Usually, they'll say, you know, they're dropping the cases, or they'll, you know, release, I guess, the people from prison at some point or whatever, but not much is ever really said about, you know, how they're going to be repaid for their time, their pain, their heartache and everything. And I think that's something that needs to be looked into, because, you know, there are too many police officers who have done, you know, this type of thing where they have, planted evidence or arrested people, you know, for nothing, and then nothing else is ever really said about, you know, what was done for them. And I think something needs to be done.
Nicole, thank you for
your
comment. Appreciate it.
I think Nicole makes an excellent point. And when she was talking, it made me think of Ivan Potts, who was a young man who had been arrested by three members of the Gun Trace Task Force. And he lost a year and a half of his life in jail.
He lost 4 years.
It's true. Yeah. It was a total of 4 years that he ended up losing. Mm-hmm. And part of that time, he actually had to spend in solitary confinement. And I was thinking of this young man who was sitting in front of me. I'm sitting in his mother's house with him, and what a truly like gentle soul he was, and what a positive person he was, and him describing the torturous aloneness of being in solitary confinement, how this young man was in jail because someone had planted a gun on him and lied. And he was being so cruelly punished. And he was talking about how the isolation could make you hallucinate and how you could just completely lose yourself. Yeah. How can you repair that? How can you make that up to someone? I'm sorry, I took away several years of your life and almost drove you mad in solitary confinement. But you're out now. Just enjoy that.
Yeah. We got to make that the last word for the segment, for the Mod Squad segment. Ted Graham and Stephen Janis of the Real News Network. My friends, good to see you as always.
Good to see you, Sean. Thanks
for having us. See you next week.
Absolutely, yep. Sean. Thank you for having us.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, the second hour, first edition of World Famous Happy Hour. DJ Cool Sunny T setting up, spinning live from 6 to 7 on the World Famous. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition.